Welcome to the Ohana Life Podcast, where I try to bring to you information in the health and wellness field. I was able to speak with Wendy Walter today of the Voice of Clay. She is a fantastic human who is so grounded in her foundation of the work that she provides. I was really happy to trace back all of her learnings and her journey along her life. She offers so much that we tried to kind of unpack that for you so that you had an idea of where you might be able to get help in this realm of somatic breathing or regressions. There's just so much. So I do think that she can touch upon a lot of things for a lot of people. She touches a large audience. She's also a fellow New Hampshireite, so it was really exciting to hear her history right here in the state. So I do hope that you enjoy this. I will try to include all of her information in the episode notes that you can find on the website, and enjoy.
Wendy, it is so nice to meet you.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for the invitation. Appreciate it.
We have a mutual friend that said that we should meet. So here we are.
Indeed.
So I'm really excited for people to learn what it is that you do, because I think that in the world climate that we're in today, I think it's really important for people to understand that there's so many modes and methodologies and branches to wellness. And it usually isn't just one thing. It has to be this, you know, all-encompassing thing for wholeness and well-being. And I really think that you're one of the pieces to that puzzle. So with that, could you tell people, you do a lot, but maybe a little bit about what you do for everything, and then maybe we'll delve deeper later.
Okay, so first and foremost, I'm a potter, so I'm a creative person. But I think what you're referring to is the somatic breathwork piece that I do, that I'm assuming we're going to offer in your group work, which you can tell the audience more about. Somatic breathwork is a technique used to get at energy that's old patterns, ancestral sort of passed down habits that we have that we are sort of reactive around. So we have an experience in life and we have a reaction to it instead of a response to it. And it's an automatic reaction, sort of like how we breathe. It's just automatic. And we don't know why it's there. So one of the reasons why I delved into this work myself was I was a person with high anxiety, frustration, anger, and a yucky relationship, and I needed help. So the person I was with at the time went and found a therapist. And after some time of working with that therapist, he said, you really need some somatic work. You got to get in the body. And when he came home and told me that, I was like, sign me up. I'm going to go try this. Whether you do it or not, I'm going to go. And there's another part of the story around that, where I had heard of this previously from 10 years before. So anyway, I went and had my first breathwork session with this practitioner and was blown away, kind of my head blew off. And I was really surprised at how simply breathing could make such a deep impact. And I knew right away that this was something I wanted to share with people. So there are lots of different kinds of breathwork techniques out there. This is a specific kind that addresses old patterns and trauma that are sort of, you know, mysteriously hidden in the body that you can't really get at with talk therapy.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, from my end of things, the energy piece where there's trapped stuff in the body, and if it's not addressed over a long period of time, and it could be, you know, 20 years, 30 years, or it could be something stressful happens in your life. And then all of a sudden this illness pops up that people didn't realize they had. So it's a trigger to that. And if it's not addressed, it comes up as that physical, a tumor, Lyme disease that maybe was sitting in the body for a long period of time. So you're saying through your work, through breath work, you're able to get at the deeper stuff sitting in there, sitting in the cells.
Right. Yeah, there's no, I think there's no way to separate the physical from the emotional, from the spiritual. Right. Absolutely. It's a whole package deal. So if there's a physical illness, that's sort of the last front line, you know, it's now time, your body's saying, excuse me, need help. And we can't just address, I think in our culture, we really try to address it just from a physical standpoint. And so the work that I do gets at, yes, the issues underneath what is potentially causing that physical reaction from the body. You know, a lot of clients I see are just feeling like they're crying all the time and they're having all this emotional reaction and in response, which is a good thing because it hasn't yet manifested in the body in a way that's making them feel sick in it, you know, health-wise. So, you know, if that's the kind of response that a client is having, that's in a way it's getting before you're going to have that physical ailment.
Yes. Way before. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So yeah. So I sort of attack the body from the physical, getting in that way, because it's a grosser thing. It's something people can feel because they're not, I don't know if it's our society, but they sort of block off that, like the crying and the tapping into something's not right, sort of that intuitive piece isn't okay. It's just because there's no proof. There's nothing to measure. There's nothing to see. So I love that you do this from the inside out, because that's just not a way that I really know how to get at.
Yeah, I would say that I work from that emotional realm when people are really unhappy and just uncomfortable and don't know their purpose and can't figure out what they're supposed to be doing, or just don't understand why they're constantly repeating patterns and, you know, just
the patterns. And that's the thing. It's like these ruts in the body, right? That just continuously go around and around and around. You have to, do you reroute it? Do you kind of make a new connection?
I would say that it's a realignment of the whole entire nervous system, so that we're literally letting go of, yeah, all of that. So you don't have that response or reaction anymore. You have a new response to life. So here's an example in my life. You know, I grew up with a brother who had diabetes, and there was always this fear in the house of somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to die. And my mother's fear. And when I started doing this work and I had kids, I noticed the correlation of that response, that this huge anxiety that I have, this fear around somebody dying, wasn't even mine. It was my mother's. And so after I had done a lot of work and breathed a lot and really had a deeper understanding and let that go out of my energy system, I'll never forget, my daughter called me at work, and instead of, you know, going into a panic, oh my God, somebody's calling me, that means there's a problem, somebody's gonna die, I just answered the phone, said hello, you know, talked to her, hung it up, and was like, wow, no response in my body. You know, I just, the after effect was really cool. Just complete different reaction and response. Yeah.
It's so interesting. So yeah, there's different sheaths, right? There's like, well, in yoga, there's the sheath of the body, the sheath of the emotions, the mental body, the breath body, right? So you're sort of, and the breath body goes between all of them. So you must be tapping into the breath piece, which gets at everything else.
Yeah, breath work is a ritual of awareness. And so, yeah, if you're a yoga practitioner, you obviously know about this. So if you're breathing to become aware of what is it that's happening in my body right now, what is it that's happening in my emotional body right now? And so the awareness that you're experiencing in a breathwork session is, again, literally rewiring the nervous system so that you have a different awareness in a moment when you're having a reaction. Take a breath and you're going to have a different response. So it doesn't mean that it like clicks in immediately. It does take some practice. It does take, you know, repetition, like with anything, learning something new and teaching your body something new. But I can't say that there aren't times, certainly for people, where it could just be an immediate thing. It's just not as common, obviously.
Yeah. I love that. Breathwork is a ritual of awareness.
Yeah.
Breathwork is a ritual of awareness. It really is, because we breathe how many breaths a day? We're maybe not aware of any, maybe one. And so by you bringing attention to the breathwork is a huge piece in itself. And I say a lot, you know, you could just do the breathing, conscious, aware breathing without really the physical and still get so many benefits. And so you're tapping into one of these benefits of what breath work can do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What would a session look like? Like, what type of breathing are you doing with them? Or is it everybody has something different depending on what's going on?
Good question. No, there's a format to this. So, what we're ultimately wanting to accomplish is a circular breath. So when we normally breathe, we breathe in, there's a pause. We breathe out, there's a pause. We breathe in, there's a pause. We breathe out, there's a pause. So what we're doing in a circular breathing pattern is taking away those pauses. So we're wanting to get the breath into the belly first, move it up into the chest area, have the shoulders move slightly, and then exhale. And you know, there's a lot to be said around which one's more important, the inhale or the inhale or the exhale. The inhale is important because you're using your will to breathe. You know, a lot of people are not feeling a lot of will in their life, and so they're not breathing at all. I mean, the easiest thing to do is not breathe, right? When you're in a breathwork session, it's often said, so much easier not to breathe. When we start to use our will to breathe, it's when we're starting to wake up and activate the system so that we start living our life more intentionally. The exhale is about surrender and letting go completely. So, you know, the opposite extreme, using our will to breathe in and trusting and letting go of, you know, handing it over essentially to a higher power with the exhale. So it's not necessarily conscious when you're going through the session of those things, but I am telling the client those things, like use your will to breathe in and then completely hand it over. The breathwork session itself has three parts. So part one is what we call the breath dance, my favorite part. Super fun, especially in a group of people. The idea is that we put on some music and we're just moving the body. We're getting the breath moving. We're getting the blood pumping. It's kind of like a little aerobic moment, you know, 5 minutes or so of getting the breath moving. There's a ha breath used in that, again, just to be conscious of the breathing. So, you know, we're moving and breathing a ha breath. Then we're going to lie down on a cushion or the floor or, you know, a pillow and a blanket and can start this circular breathing. When we're using that circular breathing, different things are going to happen. And there's waves of those things happening throughout the period of time that you're using that circular breath. The third section of a breathwork session is what's called the integration phase. And in that, part of the breathe, this is when the nervous system is getting rewired. This is when we're really letting go. In the middle section, we've done all the work. And then the last piece, we're completely letting go and allowing spirit, shall we say, or just the energy body to respond to what has happened. Some people, it looks like they're asleep, but they're not. They could be twitching and, you know, really relaxed and integrating all of what just happened. So in the middle section, when we're doing that circular breathing, you know, what we're doing is raising the chi of the body. You can feel intense because that kind of breathing is constant, it's circular. And so as the chi raises, the body's going to want to release. You know, you're getting into the energy body. You can't think your way through a breathwork session. This is not like trying to figure out what's happening, although a lot of beginners do that and, you know, are, first of all, just trying to figure out how to breathe. But imagine that you're an animal sort of running away from a predator. Let's imagine a bunny, and you're running and running and running and running, and you finally find a hole, and you get in the hole. You know, what's going to happen to that animal once they get in the hole? They're going to shake. It's like, oh my God, I almost died. And, you know, if anyone out there has ever been in a car crash, you get slammed, or been any other kind of like immediate crisis, you deal with what has to be dealt with. And once the crisis is over, you're like, whoa, like something just happened. And your body then is allowed the time to process that and shake. And then, you know, for the bunny, it's like once they're done shaking, they might look out the hole, see if there's any predator there, and then go on about their business. Kids are really good at doing this. Animals are really good at doing this. We have been taught over time, as we become adults, to shut that piece down. Like, let's not feel and let's not process any of it, because for different reasons, you know, in my family, it was, you're too sensitive, go to your room and cry, you know, why are you such a baby, whatever, stuff like that. So we're taught through our parents or our culture or our family or to not feel and to not allow that process to happen, because, you know, we're going to be seen as wrong or maybe crazy or, you know, weak, or etc. And so what this breathing technique does is gives you an opportunity to finally process all that stuff that you've shut down and allow it to move out. So there's way more space. All the static is gone and you're just lighter and freer from the past, essentially.
Yeah, I love the bunny analogy because most people say the bear analogy, but you're like, so if a bunny is chasing you, I think people would love a bunny.
No, the bunny's being chased.
Oh, so the bunny's being chased. So the bunny is us in this example. Okay. Yeah, I think I've heard it as like a bear was tranquilized. So it was scared. People are running after it. It gets tranquilized. It wakes up with the still running, right? Because it never got out. But we don't have that response to get rid of it for whatever reason, parental, environmental, jobs, friends. So you're helping to get out the trap stuff that they never processed, which I'm sure can't always be comfortable.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. I'm sure this doesn't feel comfortable at all. But once it's gone, there's a whole new level of access.
Absolutely. And you're also training the body to then do that when it does come upon some kind of trauma or issue so that it's happening in the moment and you're conscious of it and not afraid of it and not shutting it down. So,
no, so you're retraining the nervous system to do what it's supposed to do, turn on and off when we need it.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, I love talking about the nervous system. I think the nervous system is not talked about enough in, you know, Western medicine of where it needs to be. But rewiring it, resetting it, you know, I think we have to have highs and lows throughout the day, right? It's just like it needs to shut off when it doesn't need to still be in fight or flight.
Exactly. Hmm. Exactly. And most of the time we're either in fight, flight, or freeze mode. Which is why we never get a break, you know, and people are so stressed out and so full of high anxiety and so, you know, depressed. It's just, it's an interesting world we live in. But we haven't been given the tools. No one's taught people how to process that in a way more consciously.
Yeah, and that's why I love you, what you do and people in this field, because it has been a lost art of like tapping in, tuning in, finding the people you need that might not be covered by insurance because it's not mainstream, but it's more powerful. I love that this has three stages, actually, especially the integration phase, because I know like in a yoga class, we have to do Shavasana. And a lot of times maybe studios don't do Shavasana because they don't feel that that piece is important. Like it's rest and I don't feel like resting. I'm busy, this and that. But without integration, how is the nervous system ever going to know what the reset feels like, right?
Exactly. And when I teach, that's exactly what I refer to. Usually people know what, you know, yoga people in the room, if I say Shavasana or corpse pose, that's what you want to be in when you're in the integration phase and just let it go. So yeah, absolutely. Really important. If, you know, all of it's important, but the integration phase I think is most important, because like you said, if you don't have that experience, how is your body going to know what to fill the empty space with?
Yeah. I mean, then they walk out and they're bumping into things and dropping things and just like kind of disoriented all day. And that's the nervous system. I mean, that is the nervous system. So in your training, did you learn about the vagus nerve?
Sure did. Towards the end of the program, so I was trained by a breathwork facilitator from the Power of Breath studio or school in Spofford, New Hampshire. And all of that was just coming into mainstream thinking when I was going through the program. So it wasn't really fleshed out. And honestly, I'm definitely a right brain thinker. So, you know, getting into the specifics of the mind, you know, which I know some people love the science behind it. It's not really my thing. I love that they do correlate and that you can put one next to the other and they work together. But yeah, I'm not a big science person.
You're like, I'm the one who's going to go in and diaper the baby. I'm just going to get it done. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to get your emotion. We're going to get it over with. And that's it. And it might not feel great, but I got it done. You have a clean.
And that's what I love about breath work is that, and that's a great description, is that's exactly what it does. It's very efficient. I mean, you go in, get it done, and get out. And not, you know, not everyone's made to do this. You know, some people need to go a lot slower, and we can do lots of different kinds of breathing techniques to go slower. And of course, I'm going to meet a client where they're at in order to, you know, make it work for them, of course.
Yeah, I don't know if it's called tough love, but sort of, you know, there's people that do the kind of keeping you every step of the way, which you're holding space for them. They're safe. Right? You're getting that job done, but you're not talking about it in Actually, it doesn't even matter what they release, right? It's released. Or do you talk about what they've released?
We do. So a typical breathwork session is 2 hours. And the first hour is, even in the first session of those first 2 hours, we're going to talk probably an hour and 15 to an hour and a half. And your first breathwork session is going to be a half an hour, maybe shorter, depending on the client. As you come more and more, the breathwork piece grows and the talking lessens, you know, but the talking is extremely important. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. And after.
Yes, a little bit. There's a little bit of integration of talking. I don't want to take them too much out of that space of integration. You know, there's a little bit, but not much. Same if I do hypnosis. You're going to come and, you know, get taken into a very relaxed place. We've done all the talking beforehand. And afterwards, you're going to go home and I'm going to have sent you a recording. And, you know, we're not talking too much because I don't want to get you back in the left brain.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that some people,
but that's it. Yeah,
to get you to drive, make sure you've had some chocolate to ground and then you're on your way. Yeah, I think that sometimes people get caught up in the story of their life. And then if you always relate to the story, then there's never getting rid of that story.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I say in breathwork sessions is, who would you be without your story? You know, which... It just
would be no one, no one.
It just opens up the possibilities of, oh, I mean, I could be somebody else completely and reinvent myself, which is absolutely what we're wanting to do. Because if you're coming to see me, then there's something that's not feeling good. So you want to reinvent yourself and create new associations and let go of all of the reasons why you came to where you are now, basically.
So I was looking up, so have you ever heard of biopsychosocial approach to healing? So it's like looking at, so doctors are trying to do it more now where they look at the three aspects. So it's not just all the physical, they're looking at the psycho, so the mind, and then the social, like, do you have support at home? So it's really a great approach. But in those, I noticed that when I was looking up the definition of somatic, because I've had people say that I teach almost like somatic yoga, and I didn't really understand like how I might do that. But then there were almost three different definitions of the somatic, because there was it in medical terms, like anatomical terms, and then there was in your experience, which is kind of like the mental piece, and then there was this piece of like movement, which I think could be, I think it could be in terms of like moving in and out of your situations in life too. Like who you surround yourself with, because there's been, you know, scientific research on someone who's older. If they have support around, they lead a healthier, longer life. If they have no support at home, they have less of that. So in all of that, what would you define what somatic means to you?
Yeah, in this work, and it is definitely a more popular term and being used by a lot of different modalities. But in this work, the somatic term means that if you're having a feeling, I might ask you, where do you feel that in your body? Like, I'm feeling really angry. Good. Where do you feel that in your body? Well, in my jaw, because I clench my jaw all the time. Good. Now we're going to breathe into that. We're going to breathe into that place in your body. And it's not necessarily when you're in the breathwork session conscious like that. I'm, as a facilitator, maybe going to notice and recommend some places to breathe, or I just touch places in the body. When someone goes into this kind of breathing, they're entering an altered state of consciousness. They're having a transpersonal experience. So you're not talking to their left brain anymore. You don't want to try to rationalize with them or try to figure things out. You're touching the body to get them to breathe in a particular place. So the somatic piece has to do with me paying attention and putting attention somewhere that I'm aware of that they're holding onto and wanting them to breathe into based on what I'm seeing in front of me. So it can partially be, recognized by them, but it's about teaching them how to recognize it in their body. But when they're in the session itself, not necessarily. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I'm thinking, so you have a good eye then for seeing where stuff might be stuck for people.
Yeah, Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Would you say that it looks like it's tense or uncomfortable for them? Yeah.
Yeah, there's either movement happening, like shaking, or like somebody might hold their head because of some kind of thought or an emotion. And that's where I know the attention or the somatic experience is happening. Or, you know, they're wiggling their feet or their legs, or there's something, you know, energy moving in the body like that. Right. Or yes, I see tension, like holding their breath in their, you know, in their arms or their abdomen or their legs or their feet. It's not always obvious. And sometimes I have to ask, where do you feel that in your body? You know, because some people really are good at hiding all of it, you know, because that's what they've been taught. So I have to inquire.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, so it says Wendy Walter, clay medicine woman. And I think that's what makes you the medicine woman piece of that is the trained eye, right? Like being able to really see what is going on with another individual. And you're through the whole work, you're seeing beyond.
Yeah. The physical. And I would say that at this stage, this is not just about me. This is being in co-creation and collaboration with spirit. Right. So I'm listening the entire time I'm facilitating to what kind of messages or what is needed in the moment. And it's not a linear left brain kind of process. It's an intuitive, you know, listening now what kind of process. So you never know what's going to happen next. You know, so
just for the people listening, left brain is analyzing, sorting, right? And then the right side is creative.
Right, exactly. Okay. And, you know, other parts of my work where I integrate this, I work with cowrie shell divination. So cowrie shell divination is a collection of cowrie shells and stones and different little objects that are moved by the hand on a cloth. And the cloth is painted with different things on it. So when those things land on the cloth, then it's kind of like having a tarot card reading or some other kind of reading. And again, this is a collaboration or a co-creation with what in this tradition is called the ancestors. So we're having a conversation with something other than just trying to figure something out inside myself, right? So
you say moved by a hand, it's your hand or the client's hand? Oh, the client picks them. Okay.
Yep. So there's a big mound of shells and stones, and they put their hand on top of it and kind of turn them clockwise or counterclockwise, depending. And sorry about that. And move them, and then based on where they land, that's how the reading happens.
Yeah. So let's go through all the other things that you do. So you do the somatic breathwork training. You do clay. Tell me about your clay work.
Yeah, so I started working with clay when I was a freshman in high school back in the 80s. Let's not try to figure out the math. I don't know, over 30 years ago. And I went to High Mowing School in Wilton, New Hampshire, a Waldorf school where they have a fabulous pottery studio. I got addicted right away. And I always really knew I'd be a potter someday. It was just a matter of when. I graduated from high school, went off to college. I went to Skidmore College. I took one ceramics course, and it was such a different environment and teaching than what I had in high school. I was really gifted with an apprenticeship kind of program that I didn't take any more classes. I got a C in ceramics, which was for an A-type personality. He was like, what? So I never went back. But I always had the opportunity wherever I went to have access to a wheel and clay, you know, by chance. And continued to play with it. After I graduated from college, I went to Emerson College for a little while in England, thinking I might become a Waldorf school teacher, worked with some clay there. Ultimately, I moved to St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, where I worked for a potter, Colorado, where I worked for a potter, got married, had two babies, got divorced, had to make a living, and knew that that was what I was going to do. I wanted to stay home with my kids, so pottery was my way to do that. My parents are the creators of Picketty Place in Mason, New Hampshire. I don't know if you've heard of that.
So I couldn't wait to talk about this.
Yeah, so I grew up in that house, and I had my outlet, my shop, so to speak, to put my pots in to start. And, I mean, you know, as fate would have it, a sales rep from an organization in New Hampshire found my pottery and asked me if she could represent me and sell me wholesale, which was you know, spirit's way of making things happen. So I was very quickly in a wholesale business selling pottery all over New England, mostly all over New Hampshire. So more to that, but back to Picketty Place if you want to ask some questions about that.
No, I want to finish with the pottery because people didn't see that you did air quotes around, I was always given a wheel and the clay, because that's how life happens, right? You're always given what you need. We have to pay attention. And if we get stuck in the stories and we forget that there's so many opportunities ready for us. So you sort of have the life experience of receiving what you need when you need it.
Yeah, absolutely. So then I started my business in 1999 in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, just out of my garage, you know, with what little I had, and I am very persistent and I'm not a person to give up. So I worked hard, and because I was in Portsmouth, I ended up with a waiting list of students who wanted to take classes. So I was teaching a ton of classes for both children and adults. And in the midst of all that teaching, really came to realize that people's energy would shift when they work with clay. And so I became curious about that, like what's actually happening here. And not in an art therapy kind of way, but I wanted to know literally when people are touching the clay, what is that? What's happening? So I found a training online in Arizona for clay baths. So I went out and did this training, and in the training, the owner of the company had a biological dentist who was coming to lecture. And I found out that basically that clay is a negative ionic charge. It absorbs positively charged ions out of the body, just like the earth does, you know, if you've heard of earthing, but same.
Yes.
Particular kinds of clay are very potent with this, so they really pull a lot. But the biological dentist was there to talk about mercury amalgams in the mouth and how important they are to get out, and how clay is extremely beneficial pre and post amalgam removal. So again, knew nothing about this. Mind was kind of blown. Realized I had 9 silver fillings or amalgams in my mouth and wanted to get them out. Came back from that training, asked my homeopathic doctor, where do I go do this safely? Because I know it needs to be done safely now that I've had this training. And they recommended this place in Groton, Mass, called Groton Wellness. So I went in there as a patient. And in the intake, they were kind of checking out what I wanted and describing what they do there and how they operate. And when they heard that I was working with clay and I had decided to become an esthetician in the meantime, this woman kind of rolled her chair back and said, oh my God, we're opening a spa and we're looking for an esthetician and clay is perfect for what we're wanting to do. So I was immediately hired to open their spa. So I came home from the training, had enrolled myself in aesthetic school, went to get my teeth taken care of, got hired by the spa and worked at a spa for 10 years doing clay treatments, clay baths, clay foot baths.
Okay, so now I need to know what happened to the pottery studio in Portsmouth.
I was, when I first started the job in Groton, I was still working in the pottery studio, but the Waldorf school that my kids were in Kittery, Maine, wanted to end at 5th grade, and my kids were getting too old. They, you know, it was like, I gotta figure this out. So I wanted to continue with Waldorf education for them, and came home to New Hampshire, the southern part of New Hampshire, where Pine Hill and High Mowing are, for them to be able to continue Waldorf education there. So that was the main reason for the move, but commuting back and forth from Portsmouth to Groton was not fun either. So
that's a long drive, yeah. So how old are your kids now?
23 and 25.
And I hope that they're grateful that you put them through the Waldorf school.
Oh yeah, I would assume. As am I. I was lucky too. I started in 7th grade, but they went all the way through from nursery through 12, so they get the whole shebang.
That's amazing. Okay, so here's the other piece of what you do, esthetician services with clay. Now, I did not know, I mean, this totally makes sense, that clay emits the negative ions. I mean, it's earth, right? It's coming from the earth. Maybe that's why way back when everyone just made clay pots, right? It was still like a thing to do. In every ancient civilization, they have pots that you can find, and kind of that going into the earth and just playing with it was probably a type of therapy for them.
Oh, absolutely.
This natural therapy.
There's also edible clay, so you can eat certain kinds of clay, which also help you detox.
Oh, does it taste like chocolate?
Hey, I wish. I'm actually in the process with a chef working on a clay cookbook, and we will have chocolate truffles with clay in them. So we're combining the two because
I can be a taste tester if you need. So. Okay, so now you're doing, and you still do, esthetician services with clay.
Yes.
Which I think is genius because you are taking, people go to remove stress, right? And for beautifying and kind of feeling that refresh. But now you have the clay piece of it that is this negative ion piece that is relaxing as well and therapeutic. So. Yep.
And yes, so detoxifying, exfoliating, relaxing. And coming soon, I intend to join hypnosis with a facial so that if you come and have a conversation with me about what you want to work around, like in terms of patterns or, you know, if it's weight loss or whatever, we'll have a conversation. You'll go into your facial. I'll do some hypnosis and give you some suggestions while you're relaxed in your facial and then finish up the facial. So I'm combining the two together, which I'm really excited about.
You are because you're not busy enough. So, but what I love about this whole story, and I love that we're unwinding kind of your whole story, is that everything intertwines. Like one had to happen to get to the next part, right? Like divorce isn't fun, but out of that came these things. So your, you know, losses become successes in some way. And without hanging on to that, you were able to now develop these newer things, which are beneficial to so many people and unique, you know, unique in that not a lot of people are doing them now, but it is something that has been done in the past, way back when, before Western medicine. So let's talk about hypnotherapy.
Yeah, before you move on to that, though.
I almost said hypnobirthing. That's not hypnotherapy.
I want to add one more piece to that because that's a good point. After I had started working in the spa in Groton and was doing all these body treatments, one of my brothers passed away. And so another huge, like, you know, rip the heart open kind of experience, unexpected death. And in order to be able to deal with that in a positive way, I knew I had to do something. So I enrolled myself in my master's degree program for transpersonal psychology. So that's when the breathwork certification started, but I was also in a master's degree program for transpersonal psychology. So I was learning about altered states of consciousness and then also having them in the certification. So that's where that other piece comes in, is from the death of my brother and wanting to really heal myself and engage in a healing process whilst also learning out something that I could, you know, gift to other people.
I'm sorry about your brother.
No, thank you. Yeah.
I did read that in your bio actually, on your website, which I will link to so people can read all about you. But I think that you taking the transpersonal psychology program, was that before somatic breathing?
It was in conjunction with, actually.
Oh, it was. So you had to take both?
They were separate programs. I was just doing them at the same time.
Okay. Which I think is a huge piece because if you're going to do the talking with them before and some after, that takes somebody who is going to hold space in a way where you've done your work.
Absolutely.
You had to do your work ahead of time in order for that to work out really well. I think that a lot of people maybe feel that they can talk to people about their problems and kind of get it to the surface and handle it. But really aren't qualified, I mean, sadly. And if it's not done in a way that you have where there's this beginning, middle, end, right? There's this pattern, there's this framework where you're having to get out the stabilizing piece, right? So you talk about it, then you do the breath work, then they have to integrate it, then that's the stabilizing. They have to stabilize, and if they want to go back out into the world and be able to handle life, life is not easy.
Yes, and I agree with you in terms of the qualifications and, you know, forget degrees and licenses and all that. I think what I would be looking for in a practitioner is, you know, do you walk the talk? Do you just talk the talk or do you walk the talk? And the more, the deeper you go inside yourself and the more work you do on yourself, which by the way, never comes to an end, just because those of us out there are teaching people doesn't mean that we're enlightened beings and don't have issues, right? It's just that we have tools that help us address them faster in the moment so that they don't bog us down for longer and longer amounts of times, which we hope to teach people how to do as well. So finding a practitioner who really has done the work on themselves, I think is, very good to bring up.
I've done tapping, which is another way of trying to get into the deeper things. And one example that she gave, which is so true, right? But we think of trauma as like big T trauma, right? But it could have been that you were younger. And I use this example a lot, so I'm sorry for anyone listening that is hearing this story again, but you were at a birthday party and it was, half white cupcakes, half chocolate cupcakes. This is like a one-year-old or first grade birthday party. And you don't get that last chocolate cupcake and you are devastated about not getting that last cupcake, right? And then that to you at that time feels like trauma. And then depending on how the other kids dealt with it, right? Did they mock you, make fun of you? How did your parents handle it? How did the person that ran the party handle it? All those things are imprints in the cells from that time. It's not like in first grade, you know how to process that, right? Unless your parents are really in tune with processing that. And that may be something that you're getting at in your sessions with us as grown adults.
Absolutely. And, it's amazing when you're in the breathwork session, how those kind of memories come to you. I don't know your memories. I mean, we have a conversation beforehand, but I'm not going to know everything. And so you're breathing and breathing and breathing. And it's like, oh my God, I now know why this X, Y, and Z happened. And, you'll come up with the answers yourself, which is what I love about this work, is I am empowering people to find it themselves. I'm not doing a reading. I'm not figuring it out for you. I'm not like trying to change your energy somehow, with my technique. This is you doing the work, which is why I love it.
Yes, they have to be empowered. They have to want to do the work. And then you're just guiding them to do the work for themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Midwifing. Yeah.
So, okay. I think this was in your bio, but the holotropic breathing. Did you say you were certified in that? So no. I'm reading a breath book. Oh, okay.
I've done holotropic breath work. I've tried it, as just a person, client. But I'm not certified in that. It is similar to somatic breath work in that you're utilizing the circular breath, but the facilitation is very different.
Okay. You as the facilitator, it's very different than what would happen in that type of session. So I'm reading a book with James Nestor. Do you know James Nestor?
Yes.
About breath. And he had mentioned that and I had never heard of it before. So I swear I saw it maybe on your bio, but maybe not. And it seemed really crazy to me, this type of breathing that we would not want to do, but I watched an interview with him yesterday saying what it's trying to do is like get you into this crazy state. And I think the Wim Hof breathing method is very similar, where you get into this state of like your nervous system is like, oh my God, it gets into the reptilian part. It's like, I might die. I can't do this anymore, blah, blah, blah. And then when you stop is when your nervous system is like, oh, here's the opposite.
Right. So, yeah, so what happens in a breathwork session is that in terms of my work is that you have these waves of energy. Like I said, it's going to start to feel intense. And then you might feel like, what is going on? Or your body might start having a response that you want to try to control and stop. And your body, your body is finally being able to let go of some energy it's holding onto. So it might shake, or there might be some kicking, or there might be some kind of paralysis, or something might happen. Mm-hmm. We, in this particular type of breathing, in holotropic, they have different kind of rules around what you do. But in this, as a facilitator, I might say to you, I want you to make a sound and just make an ah sound or tone. Or I want you to like bang your hands and feet on the floor. I want you to move your body so that we can release that wave of energy and then come back to the breath. When you see little kids have a hissy fit and they cry and scream. And then finally, they take a breath.
Yeah, they do. They do that like that breath afterwards, like shaky, and it's over. Actually, as a parent, we know it's over. Wow. Exactly. I forgot about that.
Exactly. So those are the waves in the session that we're wanting to allow so that there can be movement of this trapped energy and then coming back to the breath. And so what we're doing again is training the body to come back to the breath, come back to the breath, come back to the breath, because we forget. We're so trained to hold our breath and to not breathe an open and healthy breath, that we shut it down and maintain, you know, where we're at.
Mm. Yeah, this is all just so, I love it all. It's so fascinating. So in hypnotic work, and I actually did a past life regression session where she did some sort of massage to my face. And I think she was an esthetician as well, to get you into the state. But I think, you know, this is where you are skilled, right? Because when they're kicking or crying or doing something that we're not used to in society, one could get scared and jump off. And you're like, no, you press on knowing exactly what direction they need to go so it doesn't get scary. So you can get to the path of least resistance, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's called an ab reaction in hypnosis or past life regression, where people suddenly have this response, like they're seeing something and crying, or you know, their body's doing something or whatever. Yes, and so I'm trained to know what to do in those moments to help them. And it really is about coming back to the breath in many ways, or, you know, disassociating with it, like seeing yourself outside of it and not being in it so much. So absolutely. Yes. I'm very comfortable around that stuff. Most people are not, but.
Well, so I do want to ask you something about how you stay grounded in life. But before that, let's tell people, what is a past life regression? Is that what you would use it for? Do you use it for like helping somebody stop smoking? The hypnosis piece.
Hypnosis can be used for anything. So yes, stop smoking, lose weight, become more creative, finish that book you want to do. Be a better achiever, get better at sports. It can be used for anything. Past life regression is using hypnosis to go into the past to understand an energetic chain that might have come over from a past life. So an example, you know, typical example might be, let's go to the physical realm, which is your world, constant migraines. I just, no matter what I do, I've been to every doctor, no doctor has been able to help me, and I just keep getting migraines. So we take you into a past life to get at the root cause of that migraine, which then allows the energetic chain to be released, so you no longer have the migraine. So once you get at that root, which could come from the past, way back in the past. So hypnosis is essentially a deep state of relaxation. We're just getting you relaxed. We're getting you out of the beta, which is consciousness, and into alpha, even better, theta, state of consciousness. So very relaxed, but not asleep. And then we've had a conversation, by the way, beforehand. So I know what we're going in there to try to sort of help with or release a pattern from. And then once you're in that state, we go back to the past, and then I start asking you questions, and you're talking back to me. So we're having this conversation while you're in the past life, and I'm getting some information and continuing to ask questions to help, again, midwife or guide you through that to what is most important and most useful.
I love this midwifing term, because that's such a great, you're like the midway between the two things. Do you ever have people come in that do not believe in past lives, but still are helped by it?
Absolutely. Yeah. You don't have to believe in past lives to get some benefits from this. It's an interesting conversation. And most people, there's a lot of people who have this experience and say, yeah, I was just making it all up, but you know what? That's fine too. It's absolutely
right.
Fine.
Because it works.
Yes,
it works.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep.
So, can we talk about the Picketty Place?
Oh yeah, sure. What do you want to know?
Well, so I, little tiny history of me, I'm from Massachusetts. I got married to my husband. We moved to New Hampshire for just, I guess, 6 years. Then we were in Florida for 3 years. And then we came back to New Hampshire, but much further north, because we were like on the Massachusetts border before. So when we first moved here, we had some friends and they said, let's go to Picketty Place. So all of us girls kind of dressed up, and I was so excited to try this place that we were going to go to, and ends up that it was the Picketty Place, which is the house that was, I'm going to get this wrong, but based on Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, so
Okay, yeah, tell me.
But go ahead with your story. Yeah, I can.
Well, anyway, so we had this amazing lunch. The waitresses had flower arrangements around their head. We ate flowers with our food. And I was like, I didn't have the studio at the time here. And I said, that's it. All of us instructors are going to have to wear flowers around our head. It's a requirement to teach. It just had such an impact on me. And I had taken a picture with the wolf sitting in the bed in one of the rooms. I know that we are not supposed to go in that room. And I quickly went in and got a picture with the wolf. This is a fake wolf, people, just in case anyone's wondering. Yes, but tell me about this place. So you grew up there?
Yes. So the wolf is a paper mache head that I made when I was probably 12 years old with a friend.
No.
Yeah.
No. Oh my God.
And my mother had it professionally painted at the time, but I believe it's the same wolf head still on the bed. So let's see. What can I tell you?
Well, I guess, is it based on Little Red Riding Hood?
So Little Red Riding Hood is a story from long ago. And Elizabeth Orton Jones was an author that lived in Mason, New Hampshire. And she was chased after by Golden Books to write any story that she wanted to illustrate, because she was a beautiful illustrator. So she decided she wanted to write Little Red Riding Hood, her version of Little Red Riding Hood. And she loved, for whatever reason, that building, Picketty Place building, and used that in her illustrations. So yes, you can see in some of the versions, the wolf knocking at the door, and you know, the bedroom where the wolf head is in was made to look like the book. So the book came first. And, you know, the outside of the house was used in the illustrations. And then my parents used that to kind of create the grandmother's room, bedroom.
I just feel like as children, like that was a story that everybody knew that story.
Yeah.
And how cool that it's here in New Hampshire, that it was like thought of here in New Hampshire. So you had the house first, and then this woman saw the place and said, oh, this would be a really good setting for the book.
Nope. So it was owned by the whole history. I've written a book, by the way. It's called Being Picketty.
I know. That's what I saw. And I'm like, we're going to talk about this. There's a book about this.
Yeah. And it's the history of, you know, my parents' story and how Picketty Place got started, but it also includes the history of the home. So there were several owners before us, but Elizabeth Orton Jones wrote her version of Little Red Riding Hood in the 1940s. My parents bought the house in the 1970s. So when they bought it, they knew this book existed. And they were, that was one of the selling points. They were like, oh, this is really exciting. So we can, you know, use this. I don't think they decided to do that until later, but we can use it as part of what we want to create. My mother loved herbs. She loved antiques. She loved to cook. And all of those things eventually came together, but it was very much one thing at a time. So started out as a gift shop, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. And she really supported locally made gifts. So all the local craftspeople in the area, she found them and she built this shop. It got so popular for whatever reason, and people were coming up from Boston, that my father finally eventually quit his job to help her. And people would come out into the middle of nowhere. Of course, back then there were way less houses and it was just much more remote, and ask, okay, you know, we're here. Where do we go to lunch? I mean, there's nothing. There was literally nothing around. So that was the impetus for them to create this tea house, you know, grandmother's tea house. And they came up with this, you know, menu where there were two options and everything else was the same for the month. And divine grace, I don't know where it came from. They just made it up. And it's been like that ever since.
That is so cool. I don't know if it's because I just moved here, so those memories are fresh, but the pictures we took that day, you know, I think in the gift shop, they had this enormous hat, this huge sun hat, bright colors. So I have a picture of me in that. And then the girls that we went, our hair just happened to look beautiful that day. We had all these curls coming down and it was like, this is the best place ever. So that place holds a special place in my heart. Because of the time, I think the time, everything just fit together so well. But I think it's also just a magical place. So that's really cool that you were there.
Yeah, as my father would say, the land itself has a particular energy that is magical.
Yeah,
that's really why it worked for them and why it works still. You know, people have a lot to do with it, but there's something about that land that is particularly magical.
There really is. I would attest to that. So how are they doing right now with COVID? Or have they been closed?
So my parents sold Picketty Place around 1999, 2000. And the chef who's currently running it is who bought it for them. He was their chef at one point, and he took it over from them. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not connected to it so much anymore. I imagine, like everybody else, you know, do the best they can. Yeah. But I don't
know. How's your work been with COVID? Are you just as busy or?
No, definitely challenging.
Especially if you're doing hands-on and.
Yes, I am seeing clients now one-on-one, which is lovely, and I'm so grateful. We are doing pottery classes again, requiring masks. I don't have a very large space for that. So when people do come for the pottery classes, we let them know beforehand we can't offer the 6 foot of social distancing, but we are requiring the masks. And I am doing the facials and, you know, with all the precautions that have to be taken, etc. But it is definitely a whole new world. And I have integrated online teaching to my repertoire. It's not my love because I'd much rather see people in person. And I think that's true for most people.
Yeah. It's your skill is the in person. What do you do to stay grounded?
Well, I work with clay, girlfriend.
So every day. Yeah. I mean, that's almost like a meditation. It's the negative ions, the grounding.
Well, I'm not necessarily in there every day, but it is, you know, huge piece of what we have here. So I'm around it every day. I also am one for morning pages. I'm familiar with that, but I free write every morning. I try to every morning at least 3 pages, and that really helps me stay grounded.
Not
much of a, you know, I promote meditation. I'm not much of a one to go sit down and meditate. I will breathe if I need to. I still go get sessions myself with breathing. But the writing is what really helps me, for sure.
Is there anything else that you think people should know about you?
Let's see.
Besides, you're absolutely beautiful, by the way. I get to see you. Not everyone's going to be able to see you, but.
Let's see. I'm currently, I think I told you, working on a clay cookbook and a children's book called Simon the Gnome, The Voice of Clay and Magic. And those images are going to be done with, I'm working in collaboration with a felter. So that'll be hopefully coming by the end of this year. And
you say gnome, like G-N-O-M-E. Oh, yep. You had me at gnome. I want it. I want this book.
So because clay works with all the elements, earth, air, fire, and water, my second book, which is called The Voice of Clay, 365 Quotes About Clay, is broken down into earth, air, fire, water, and ether. And everything at this point will be themed around that. I'm actually working on some gardens around that as well on the property. Someday I'd love to have it look like Picketty Place, but not there yet. I'm not my mother for sure.
Yeah, you'll have your own thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm currently teaching integrated imagery regression hypnosis for Atlantic University, as well, to have an online kind of gig as well. So lots going on.
You're the coolest person ever. Oh. I am so glad Celeste told me about you.
Yeah, I'm so glad to meet you. And it sounds like you have lots of cool stuff going on too. So I look forward to collaborating.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this today. I really, really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Went by so much faster than I thought it would.
Thank you for listening. I am going to have Wendy as part of the Ohana yoga training, that 10-month training that we have beginning in September, all the way through June. I feel that one of the pieces of learning is to release and kind of tap into the things that may be stifling you in life. And this is one more piece to the puzzle of you feeling whole to then receive and accept everything that you want in life. So if you want any more information from Ohana in general, the website is ohanayoganh.com. So do enjoy your day, and I love you all.